I don't know.
We could Google movie news again. Just see what happens. Expendables 4. All right, do we have any other cold opens?
It's bad.
We wanted to go see a movie this weekend, and we were looking at it, and it's like, oh, there's just nothing out right now. Like,
this is what we need to talk about, is that there's a total lack of something to watch that's brand new.
Well, the last time we had you on, it was like Barbie and Oppenheimer were like the big thing, and it's like those two movies are still at the box office, and everything else is just like not great. The Nun 2.
I get... I'll put it this way. I work at the theater and I get 2 free tickets a week and I have not used them in like a month and a half. Because we have The Nun 2, we have The Equalizer 3, we have The Expendables 4, and we have My Big Fat Greek Wedding 3. I'm good.
It's really bad. They did release Stop Making Sense, but I haven't seen that near me at all. So I've been rewatching early 80s Siskel and Ebert, and they have unending. It's amazing how many movies were released. I'm actually trying to redo the 81 and 82 and 83 Oscars and keep going like that.
Yeah.
And the list of movies, and especially movies that are adults, not juveniles, is unbelievable. So I'm looking at that now, I really feel whatever Scorsese and everybody else has been talking about. Because if you were in the early 1980s, 70s probably, but 82 is a boom year for movies, the biggest ever or biggest in the last 50 years or something. That was E.T. and a bunch of other things. There's just nothing right now. Nothing.
And I've gone on YouTube wormholes with, I'll get recommended like Siskel and Ebert. And I'll just sit there and I'll just watch highlights and clips, like, unending. Just like, oh, cool, they review, like, especially if it's, like, a movie that I really like. Like, them, reviewing, like, Goodfellas or, like, Boogie Nights or any of those kind of movies. But it's just, like, I always watch the full intro to the show because it's always, I love it. There's something about it. And I feel like Ebert is one of those people that, like, when I disagree with him, I really disagree with him. But when, like, he feels passionately about something and I agree with him, it's like, hell yeah, that dude's smart. He knows what he's talking about.
They've been watching their worst of the year.
I love watching
those. Are very funny. And they get better as they go. But some of the movies that they watched, I've never heard of. And there's one where there was it's in 1982, there's a blind guy, and he's trying to become ingratiated into society, and he's out there drunk driving, and Ebert is just going to town on the depiction of blind people. But these early 80s terrible movies, we never hear from him. I think we should go back and review some of those, rewatch them, because they sound hideous. I can't believe how terrible they are.
Well, you know, when you only look at it through the lens of, like, the most popular movies of their time, you're like, man, what a year. Like, 1994, I think, is, like, considered, you know, it's like, that's like Forrest Gump, Pulp Fiction, like Shawshank Redemption. It's like, yeah, this is like the best Oscars, like best picture contenders, like, ever. And it's like, I bet if you really look, there's a lot of slop that came out in 1994.
94? I was alive then. I got to look it up. Yes.
Just like stuff that was in the box office for like a month and then disappeared and no one remembers.
So I'm hoping this is where all our terrible movies are coming out, Expendables 4 and whatever, Big Fat Greek Wedding 3. I'm assuming those are bad. I don't know though.
Sure.
Wasn't going to go spend 160 minutes, 3.5, 4 hours. I was going to die before they died in Expendables. Watching it. I can't believe how long that movie is.
Is it really 160 minutes?
Yes.
Oh my God. It's so needless. Just everything is 2.5 hours or more now.
Yeah. Ridiculous.
Also, The Expendables is stylized as EXPEND4BLES.
Yeah. Expendforbles.
Expendforbles.
Yeah.
Oh, I know. There is one question I do have for you guys. I jumped the topic. This came up in my Discord. I thought this was interesting. Do you mm-hmm. Like stop making sense? Talking Heads, right?
And mm-hmm.
There's Scorsese has one with the band. I don't know if you've heard of that.
The Last Waltz.
Yeah, The Last Waltz.
Mm-hmm.
So, do you have to like the music in order to appreciate the movie That's about the question. Musicians? And I was trying to figure out. Okay, is if it's a concert, maybe you do, but no. I mean, do you just evaluate it on the movie cinematic quality, or like I don't know? Because someone was asking me about why I don't like the Woodstock movie, and like I think I don't like the music. Really, I don't. Maybe you don't have to.
You can. I feel like with the Woodstock movie, you can like look at it as like a lens of understanding the culture at the time, like that sort of late 60s hippie culture, like kind of. But if it's 90% music and you don't vibe with the music, then I think there's like certain limits that you reach of like enjoyability.
Well, so how is Stop Making Sense one of the greatest concert movies of all time? You have to like unanimously.
Yeah, I get the question because it's not like, you know, people can point to like classics like Citizen Kane and Casablanca, and they're, I mean, not everybody agrees on those now, but you can look at them and be like, oh, there's like certain, you know, all these new techniques that Orson Welles brought to the cinematic language with Citizen Kane and all that stuff. And but yeah, with like a concert thing, the music is so important, and it is like, can you say that if you're like, I hate these guys' music? And it's hard for me because I do like the Talking Heads music. So
it's the
I
big suit.
Am kind of biased towards. Yeah, it's just the big suit. Yeah,
that's really what it is. Well, how do you feel about Pink Floyd's The Wall? I haven't seen it in a long time, but I think Pink Floyd's The Wall is mostly a movie and the songs kind of happen.
Right.
Interstitially.
It's more like a musical, kind of. Yeah. Like a stage musical, almost.
Yeah.
And that's what I was going to bring up, because, like, I kind of don't like a lot of musicals, like stage musicals, and a big reason is I don't gel with the music.
Yeah.
But right. it's more of just the, I think it's the style of musical theater music that I don't like, because it's always people just, like, saying very literally, like, this is what I'm thinking right now, and this is what I'm doing.
Yeah.
And there's never really too much nuance to it.
I mean,
that's kind of what I don't like.
For me, for like musical theater specifically, I have to be in the room where it's being performed to really like enjoy it. Like, that was an argument that an ex of mine always had, where it was like, listen to the soundtrack album. And it's like, I don't like this. Like, I think it was over Hamilton, and like listening to the music, I just like, it sounds like a theater performance. I don't really care for it. And then I saw, this was like 2017, so forgive me. I saw Hamilton in Chicago, and it was like night and day difference. Cause like I was like an active participant, as you know, annoying and academic as that may sound. Like, I was like in the theater watching it happen in front of me. And I think I enjoy musical theater that way, but like, watching it on a screen, on a TV, it doesn't work for me. So I don't know. I don't know if we've answered the question or come closer to figuring out why. Because it's like, you know, I saw Purple Rain. There's another Prince concert film that he did, Sign of the Times.
Sign of the Times.
And it ruled. But I also love Prince's music. So if you don't like it,
sure.
I don't know. It's tough. Yeah. That's a good question. That's a good thought experiment.
Yeah, because I couldn't figure. It's a claim to Stop Making Sense, and it's making a lot of noise because they re-released it. But
like the band got back together. Like the four of them were like at an event together, and there's, if you know the history of the Talking Heads, like David Byrne kind of isolated himself. Like the band kind of broke up over him like being really controlling and kind of weird, and then like they all got back together to like go to the red carpet thing, which is kind of a big deal because I don't think they'd done anything together in like a number of years.
Yeah, I watched like a 30-minute interview with them, like Spike Lee was interviewing them, and just like watching all the, like when David's like answering, and what's their name, the Chris France and what's the girl, what's Tina Weymouth, they're like, I'm just like watching their faces to see if, because it, I don't know. I don't know if you're like reading too much into it, but it's like, is there still like, is there still
got tension?
Yeah. Yeah. So I don't know. I don't know if we answered the question about musical theater, but we can talk about the like minus the singing.
Well, let's put it this way:
just dancing.
If Taylor Swift, and murder. If Taylor Swift released a movie, and I think she's got some kind of one. Doesn't she have something like this that's coming out in the theaters? I don't think it's a.
I think so.
I think it's like a one day thing, but
it's a, like a concert greatest, event.
Yeah, isn't that the yeah. greatest concert or greatest musical movie ever? Because
not since Stop Making Sense has one concert film.
Because united everybody the country. Likes her music.
Yeah.
Many people I know. Yeah. So I. So the yeah. Demi's filmmaking qualities, but then I watched that concert and I'm like, well, okay, it's the lighting. Like I don't know. I really don't.
Some of the stage production is kind of cool. Like, God, what song is it? This must be the place where there's a bunch of
with
people.
With the lamp.
There's like the lamp. There's like some cool lighting. There's some cool like
did
visual elements.
Did he do
elements.
That though? Is that part of the whole tour?
But is that David Byrne?
I think that's David Byrne.
Yeah,
David Byrne does the stage directing. Demi is more cinematography and stuff.
Yeah,
and so I think there's some awesome stage production. There's some awesome cinematography in that, and I think that does help. I think it's also like the energy of the band as a whole, and just how like it's a really good performance. Like they all just congeal really well. So like if you're looking at it more from an academic perspective of like yes, they are all playing together really well. They're very like they're working as a cohesive unit. They're, you know, checking off the list of like things that you should do as a concert act, you know. Yeah,
I didn't know if it was the editing or something like that. So I just wonder because I saw a Talking Heads concert. It was like in 1980, three or four years before. They had Adrian Belew in the band. They were real as a guitarist. And
yeah, me too.
I liked it better. So I was thought
that was
is that
the name of this band is Talking Heads?
I don't know. It was about 1980s.
On my music podcast, Chris Wade, who was on this podcast, he brought in. The name of this band is Talking Heads, and he also made the same point that he liked it better than Stop Making Sense.
Oh, okay.
So that's two people that I know now that prefer
because
that one.
The music or something else? Because I honestly don't watch for anything cinematic usually with concerts, including that one. Anyway, whatever. I actually am segging you into this movie, by the way. which has a musical score that just plays over and over and over again, so much that I nearly died from that.
Yeah, I tried kind of segueing us into it earlier, we've killed the transition.
Getting killed. I guess.
Welcome back, ladies and gents, to another episode of There Will Be Duds. What episode is this?
118?
118? Sure, if you say so. Yep. I am your co-host, TJ, and with me, as always...
As always, I am Nick, and returning to the show with us this week is...
Josh Matthews, Professor Matthews. I have Learning About Movies channel, and I always enjoy being with you two. And
woo,
I mean, sometimes it was you three, but now it's you two.
it's a rotating lineup.
And I'm at fault for picking this one, good, bad, or otherwise. I had no knowledge of this movie. I had only watched one Argento movie before, so this was brand new to me as well.
Same. Well, this was my first of his, but it's been on my list. And that movie that we are talking about is Suspiria from 1977, directed by Dario Argento. It follows Susie Banyan, an American ballet dancer who travels to Berlin to attend a world famous dance academy. She wants to do ballet, right? That's what you do. But then some people get killed off. It is a horror movie, almost kind of a supernatural slasher movie. And it's kind of revealed that it's the dance academy is a cover for a sort of witch's coven.
I'm sorry, what was that?
A witch's Coven.
Witch's Coven.
Is that what you're doing? A Witch's Coven? Yeah. good catch. And yeah, it's a very iconic movie, I would say. Like, it's a big, it's probably like the number one giallo horror movie that people know about. Very colorful, very vibrant. Yeah, and this one was brought in by Josh. I don't think any of us had seen this one before.
Nope.
So it's a good one to knock off the list at the very least.
Yeah, that's pretty much my feeling on it right now.
Yeah, yeah.
Who wants to go first?
Yeah.
Well, did you bring this in?
This one has a very high rating, yes, on Letterboxd. I am even surprised by how high it is.
Does it?
It's 4.0.
Ooh.
Which
anything four and above is very good on Letterboxd.
Yeah, and I'm looking at the remake too. The remake has a 3.7. I think it's found its fans, or the fans have found it on Letterboxd. Yeah.
Have you or either of you seen the remake?
No.
I watched the remake originally, like when it came out, didn't really gel with it that much. And then after watching this one, for some reason, even though I'm kind of like you guys, kind of in the middle on this one, I was like, I really want to watch the remake again. And I gotta say, I enjoyed the remake a lot more after watching this one. I think the remake is a bit more like a bit more kind of subtle. It's not as like direct. I'm trying to think of the word. It's a bit more like artsy, a bit more kind of loose, like with the story. And I think having the original and seeing this, it is more of a straight up, like, this is what's happening. This is what's going on the whole time in this one. And then watching the remake and be like, oh, okay, that's what they're doing here. That's what's going on. Yeah. Kind of helping me put together the pieces of the remake. It's good. And Tilda Swinton plays three characters. And she's awesome. Tilda Swinton's one of my favorite actresses. Yeah. She plays Miss Blanc or whatever, like one of the lead teachers. She also plays the Mother Suspiriorum, the like, she shows up at the very end. She's like the invisible one.
Helena Marcos?
Yeah, Marcos, but she's like a more prominent character in the remake. And then she also plays a male psychiatrist who is like investigating the academy.
Doctor Strangelove going on.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So I'd recommend that one. I'd recommend the remake.
That's interesting. Good. This one has 400,000 people marked as watched, 56,000 5-star ratings, 84,000 4-star, and once you get down to about 2.5, you're just looking at a couple thousand people. So it's amazing. I'm actually shocked at how many people are marking this very high. And I kind of want to know why. So would you please explain this to me?
are you talking about the remake or the
original? No, the original.
The original.
Those were the original.
The original, I think, is weird, too. I didn't like the original as much. I fluctuated. There were parts where I was like, oh, this is a really cool scene. There's some really cool things going on here. And then there was a lot of it where I was like, this is boring. This is very, very bad, like, spaghetti Western-ass, like, dubbing with their dialogue and, like, these people who clearly... I mean, it's in German. Dario Argento is...
Italian.
So, obviously, it's... I'm sure a lot of these actors, actresses, aren't American.
Right.
And you can really... like, Susie, you know, she talks, she's fine. And Jessica Harper is an American. I'm sure she was... that was her actual voice. But there's so many other people, like Olga, Miss Blanca or whatever. You can just see so, obviously, so
they're
many...
they're saying watermelon, or they're saying, you know, whatever, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
You know, empty... Well, yeah, there was, like, an IMDb trivia fact that, like, Jessica Harper was, like... because they didn't record any sound on set. They very seldom record. So she was like, yeah, it was kind of hard to like deliver my lines while someone's just hammering away at something, like some production guy is just hammering part of the set because they're not using the sound from
That's funny.
So she's just like, okay, she's performing and there's just like shit going on behind her.
Okay.
Yeah, this one was another one that I really was anticipating liking more. I wish I liked it more. And I think vibes based, it's kind of cool. Like I do like the use of color and like the use of lighting to create an atmosphere, but a lot of the time it just felt kind of boring. I was just like kind of waiting for something. And it wasn't really even like all that violent, or I guess there were a few instances, like the opening scene with her like being chased by this otherworldly figure that stabs her a bunch of times and then like hangs her through the thing.
And like the cutaway to like her exposed heart and the knife going into that it is like, a very like visceral, like it got a few like reactions.
Started out
me.
Really strong, I would say, in terms of like, okay, this is the horror movie that I've heard of. Like it's got that kind of 70s like Romero's Dawn of the Dead, like guys getting their guts pulled out. Like that close up of like the realistic looking heart getting stabbed, and like there's a certain way that like 70s horror would do that, like someone stabbing their hand and it just like they do like a super close up on like a clay model and they would just like bubble with like that thick syrupy blood. I'm like, yeah, this is a 70s horror movie, cool. And then it just kind of cuts to like the Dance Academy stuff, and like this movie's a tight 90, but I'm still just like, why is this why is a lot of this in here just like this weird overdubbed like kind of campy boring stuff? I don't know.
Yeah, it is 90 minutes, and yeah, you're right. It does feel like there's a lot of just excess, even though it is a short movie, because like I don't really feel like the characters are that developed all that much. Like there's all these scenes where and I get like lingering on certain things to again create that kind of that atmosphere that you want in a horror movie, but there just wasn't any room given to like live with these characters. The remake is about an hour longer than this, so it does have that too, but it also does so much more with the time that it takes. Like even if it was the same length, there would be so much more in it, because you have this outside investigation with like that the male Tilda Swinton character. That's like a whole separate storyline that they work into it, and I'm not like in love with the remake, but compared to this one, it's just like seeing how much they improved on this. It makes this one hurt a little, like even more that I didn't you know enjoy it as much as I wanted to. Because it sucks when you see like a classic and you don't find it to be as cracked up as it as it should be.
Yeah.
So is the problem with us or with the? Like starting 80,000 people or whatever love this movie. This brings up, there's two ways to watch a movie. Maybe, I mean, a lot more than that, but two. One is to just have a sight and sound experience. You know, the colors, the shapes, the sound effects, the 2001 kind of experience. And then the other is to watch as a story, as a narrative, and it's visual and oral, but here's the characters and how they develop, as you mentioned. And so I'm wondering if I watched it just for the effect of it, would that change? But I can't get over that there is an attempt at a plot. It just has not much of anything with that.
Yeah.
The plot. I mean, she shows up, she gets terrorized. That's about it, right? And then the ending has to happen.
Right.
And then you know it's going to happen from the beginning. So if I watch it as a plot, and I look at these original reviews, like from the 70s, and that a lot of them are picking on that very thing. But I think a lot of people are watching it for like the aesthetic.
I think
and the colors.
Definitely.
I mean, the color scheme. So if you just get wowed by the color scheme, like, And I did feel like this movie, you tell me if you think something else. If I'd like to experiment on the people and tell them this was from 1995. I just give it to him and say, this is a 1995 movie. I bet a lot of people would believe me because and what I mean is the Criterion, I guess it's a restored version. I don't know, but the one I watched on the Criterion channel, it does have a very really crisp look to it. And maybe the dubbing would give it away, but if you just showed it to somebody, the look of it. Yeah. Do you think I'm right or not? Because I thought it looked advanced for its time. Let's put it that way.
I mean, there were those like the Jackie Chan transplants into America that had the terrible dubbing were pretty popular at the time. So I don't think you'd have to worry too much about the dub thing.
Well, didn't you say, was it you, TJ, that said that like 70s movies, you said you'd like they you thought they looked ugly?
Yeah, I generally I think this was when we talked about about Network actually.
Oh, okay.
That I generally dislike the palette of 70s movies. Yeah. That's not saying that they're all bad because I don't like their palettes. I love Network. I love Dog Day Afternoon. I love Sidney Lumet movies. You know, maybe that's it.
Right.
this I would not put in that mold because it has its own look. You know, right. It's so distinct.
And I think that's itself. Why you could like maybe show somebody and tell them it's 1995. And they might be prone to believe you because it doesn't just look... Because I feel like you show...
At least 85. At least like 10 like years later.
People can sniff out that 70s aesthetic. And this one, for the most part, doesn't have it. Like, and it's just... I don't know. It's just funny imagining like the perspective of the characters just walking around. And it's just like, how are you not scared all the time? You leave your dormitory and it's just like red outside.
Yeah.
Or just, I know, like, primary colors everywhere you go and like
right, and how much of that is supposed to be like, is that what's actually there for them? Is that in their heads or is that just
is it for us,
you know,
an
artist? Yeah, is that just for the audience? Eh, I don't know.
Cuz they're acting very normal for like
okay. That's always a question with very like visually distinct movies.
Okay, so that's a great observation. And this movie tries to play with it being a total fantasy world, but also in reality, obviously, it's Germany. Okay, so this might be a place you could go to. But it's having it both ways, which I don't like, because Wizard of Oz clearly is, oh, there's fantasy world, fantasy land, Oz, reality's clear. Alice in Wonderland, same thing. So both of those are in this movie, right? But I can't tell what I'm supposed to think of the reds everywhere and the greens everywhere. Is it the perception? But whose perception? And I just don't I like having my fantasy world a little bit separate from my reality. But maybe I don't know.
Yeah, that's a good observation, because, like, you get it in bits and pieces, like the lady with, like, the nephew, who I didn't really feel like any... I was expecting something to happen with the nephew, and nothing really did. Like, you have a creepy little kid with, like, a Dutch boy haircut.
Oh, the little boy. Yeah, yeah,
yeah. Like,
right.
I guess that was,
Albert.
Like, you know, when she's walking the halls, like, during the day... It's kind of like, it's kind of a little bit of that like 70s palette, like that sort of like muted gray and blue. Like she sees like the lady who like, does she say something to her? Does she like curse her out? There's like a scene where she's walking down the hallway and there's, I think she's one of the cooks later on and she's sitting there with a little nephew and she like gives her a look and it's kind of like this foreboding thing. It's just like, this lady just put a hex on me. And it's like, there's a, but then it's, I don't know, it goes in between so seamlessly between like those super colorful like palettes and then like a little bit of like, yeah, like the separation of fantasy and like reality is not super like drawn out, I guess.
At what point do you watch a movie like this too? And because it's old and maybe a little bit, it didn't have the advantage of seeing movies from the last 45 years. You go, okay, there's a girl and she's in a dangerous place and she's always isolated and never, she's, movie characters like this today, if you're gonna write a movie, ought to know they shouldn't be by themselves, right? Because the viewers should know that and then they should know that. But I watched this movie and it's like a teenage horror shock thing where you just isolate the female and terrorize her. But then again, you guys had me watch Texas Chainsaw Massacre, and I had the same problem.
Yeah,
it's just this character being isolated and terrorized, and like, I'm asking, "What's the point?"
Yeah, and doing that thing in horror movies that I kind of like don't like. Like I know with like a lot of these movies, you're supposed to suspend a little bit of of disbelief. Yeah. Just like, oh yeah, this character is like scared and they're in shock. But that sort of like, I'm so scared that I'm just going to wiggle around and forget how to move all of my arms and legs to the, while I just like this. Okay. This is like a scene that I remember now from Suspiria that like kind of made me mad. It's her friend who gets up in the middle of the night.
Sarah.
Yeah. So she knew Pat, the girl that ran away at the very beginning. Who I think was like onto what was going on at the school. She's the one that gets hung. She went to like look for her notes because she had like notes about like what was going on. She can't find them. So she gets up and starts like walking the halls of the school and she starts getting chased by something, someone. And there's this extended, like, it almost felt comedic when she's like got her back against the wall and she's so scared she can't move. And there's this person on the other end of the door trying to jam a knife in and just push the lock up and they just can't get it. It's like, you're supposed to be this like supernatural, mystical, powerful force. And you just get to sit there and just watch it go like jiggle, 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 jiggle. And she's just like,
they were witches. Couldn't they just like
just jiggle, jiggle, jiggle. And it just cuts back to it several times to the point where I was like, I thought it was supposed to be comedic. That this
it went on a little long. Yeah.
This like this witch on the other end is just like, dang it, come on. Why, I hate these doors. Why did we put these doors in this school?
She already used all her spell slots for the day, so she couldn't she didn't have any left over to open a door. That said, when she that's the thing that'll give the movie is like it did make me squirm a little bit in the way that like a horror movie should, like with the kill, that initial kill with Pat, that whole thing was horrifying. And then
the reveal part, of like, her lady, the lady with like the glass, like in her head.
Oh yeah, that I was like, oh shit, that was cool. And then like, yeah, as silly and like drawn out as that scene is with the lock, I'm like, okay, where's this going? Sarah makes it through the window, and she's like, okay, I'm good. And she jumps into the pit of razor wire, and I was like,
oh gosh.
Yeah, that made me think of like a Saw movie, like a trap Saw, where like just like
yep.
Every time you move, you're just getting cut.
Yeah.
And then she just cuts her throat.
Yeah, and then it cuts her throat anyways. I'm like, I think she probably would have killed herself anyways.
Yeah. But.
I was shocked at how loud and aggressive this movie was really quickly. Usually it takes a long time for these things to warm up. And the music especially is whammed. I don't know. You have to correct me. When a horror movie, 3 or 4 or 5 minutes in, and it's just very loud. And aggressive immediately. Can you think of such a thing? Because I was actually shocked that, especially a movie for this period, was doing that.
The two most recent, and I really like the way that they do them. The two most recent Evil Dead movies have very like in your face, like very loud and aggressive, like opening sequences.
Mm. Yeah, Evil Dead Rise.
I really that like was, those.
Evil Dead Rise was a good one. That was a fun one.
Mm. Yeah, it's very similar to the you didn't see the 2013 one, Nick. You still not seen that? It's kind of has a similar like, oh, this is like somebody else who's possessed, and you know, this takes place before the movie or whatever, but we're just kind of showing what it's like. And
right, yeah, this one it made me think of Phantasm, actually, because
I see that a little bit. Yeah,
Phantasm. Have you seen Phantasm?
Mm-mm.
It's I think it's Don Coscarelli's first movie, but it also features a score that is used liberally throughout it. Like that main like Phantasm motif like shows up again and again and again. And that's like the first thing I thought of, because when she's like walking through the airport, it felt almost comedic. She's walking through the airport. It's silent. She looks out the window, the music starts playing, and then the music cuts off when it cuts back to her silence.
Right.
She looks again, the music picks up again, back to her silence. I was like, that's a weird choice.
Yes. Like, and that's the one clue.
Why wouldn't you keep the music going? But I don't know.
That's the one clue. It's all in her head. This is all her perception, that's the way.
Sure, okay.
You know, that's where I got, okay, this is all her, but it warped. But then I think it is the way things actually look in this world, wherever she is. Yeah, what'd you think about the theme of this movie? I liked it, and for a while
the theme song, or
yeah, no, even just the music in general. I got all jazzed up because about 10 minutes in, I was looking this up and it said it was by an Italian progressive rock band called Goblin.
Yeah.
I never heard of them, but I thought, oh, progressive rock. I like progressive rock a lot.
Yeah.
In this period of time. And then the theme played, and then it played, and then it played some more until about the end when it was just...
There wasn't...
For me, over and over, da-da, I can sing it, and it's like... Four bars repeated the whole time.
Yeah.
I gotta say, I liked it.
And did you?
Because I wasn't like completely engrossed in the movie, maybe that didn't make the music like seem as repetitive to me. Mm-hmm. But I liked the music a lot. I guess I just like this style. And another thing, Tom York scores the remake, and that's also a very good score. So
that's like the one thing I knew about it was that Tom York did the remake.
Wow. Yeah.
It's also very good.
Yeah. I mean, I'm looking at the track listing and there's like 8 songs on here and I gun to my head, I can't really think of any other music other than that main theme. And it's like,
yeah, that you just sang it. That was it.
Yeah.
And I guess there are like slight variations. Were there like voices singing along with it? Like, at one point, it was like, which?
Maybe. I could see that.
I thought there were kind of, like, these sort of, like, demonic vocals that were happening along with the song at some point.
That sounds right. Like, some, like, dark, like, ominous, like, humming, chanting type stuff. It would fit the vibe, for sure.
So then, you guys may know this. I did not look it up. Did John Carpenter just take as much as he wanted to from this movie? Or was it just a coincidence? Everything from the theme music to some of the things that happened in it.
Oh, I don't know.
For Halloween. I guess sounded the music sounded like Halloween to me. And then, of course, Halloween's the next year. Isn't it?
That is true.
78 or 79, yeah.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think how... No, yeah, Dark Star does have different... I'm trying to think if like, because I mean that's how John Carpenter scores like all his movies. So I'm like, did he do that? And he only made a couple movies before Halloween. So I'm trying to think if he had that same style pre Halloween. Then it's like no, that was just his style, but just a coincidence.
Yeah, this is because this movie and Texas Chainsaw, which we'll get to next week. Because, like, when we did, like, our spooky movies last year, I picked Halloween, like, John Carpenter's Halloween, because it was, like, a classic I had never seen. It was, like, a John Carpenter I hadn't seen.
Mm-hmm.
And I think even in the back of my head back then, I was worried that it was, like, I'm really worried that, like, this isn't going to hold up to the idea I have in my head of, like, how I should feel about this movie. This, you know, 400,000 watches on Letterboxd. 4.0 average rating, and I really enjoyed Halloween last year. If I can remember correctly, I think I liked it a bit more. But this, I think I liked Halloween more than this. I don't know. It felt more grounded. Yeah. The characters were more interesting. This,
right? Yeah.
I mean, there are some like parallels, I guess, like the whole like final girl type deal, where I guess like Susie is kind of like the final girl of the movie. But it's just like I don't know anything about her. Really, I don't know anything about her at all.
Laurie feels like much more like a complete character than Susie does in this. Yeah, for sure.
Yes.
That's kind of what I mean is like you get that Susie is like, you know, it's a ballet class, she wants to do that, but like that's about it. I don't feel like there's much like character development shown in the movies. It's just she kind of futzes around in this dance academy and then you know, there's some spooky scenes and then she like creeps in, she's like, oh yeah, I'm gonna like count their steps, and then I found the secret lair because I counted their steps, and then oh, they see me and I'm gonna stab the lady, and then I'm gonna leave, and that's the end.
I laughed again,
very abrupt.
I laughed again at that scene when she said to her friend, wait, they're going to the left, the doors are to the right, and her friend's just like, oh my God, I've never thought of that before. Like, oh my God, Susie knows her cardinal directions? I've never thought of that.
I will say regarding that ending, though, I was actually kind of legitimately bummed that Pavlos was a bad guy. I really thought, I was like, I want this movie to, like, have some red herrings in it. Pavlos is, like, the big kind of lurch dude. Yeah.
I was thinking Jaws from James Bond.
Oh, yeah, yeah. That's a good comparison, too. And I thought he was, like, such an obvious, like, setup to be, like, a bad guy. Like, he was so obviously, like, they're pointing, like, oh, this guy's creepy, this guy's weird, right? And I want him to be like, no, he's not. He's one of the nice ones. But then, yeah, he's just...
He's doing what they said he was
the whole time. Yeah.
It's kind of a bummer.
There's one scene in here I will never forget, and it was not... By the way, I would kind of recommend this movie. It just depends on if you're going to watch it for the colors and the whatever else you want. Sure. You know, yeah. That way, if you're going to watch it for plot, not so much. But though I will never forget the Seeing Eye Dog. I mean, never forget this because it's one of those things where I almost find it offensive if it's just, I know this is goofy entertainment, so I'll just let it be over there, but man, Seeing Eye Dog turning on its blind companion.
Yeah.
I don't like, just give me Cujo attacking him. I mean, some wolf figure, not his own pet.
Yeah. Yeah,
that's right. I didn't think about it like that, but yeah.
Yeah, I was watching this movie with my girlfriend, and as soon as there's an animal on screen, she's just like, does this dog die? Does this cat die? Does this animal die? Like, that's her first question, and I'm like, I haven't seen this, so I don't know. I hope not. And then the dog turns on him.
So the dog didn't die, at least.
Which I guess is a good subversion of, like, because usually animals are, like, you know, the first thing to go.
Right.
Because it's like they represent, you know, just like, you know, good and innocence, and like only a real evil bastard could do that. And then
there's a website. It's called like Does the Animal Die or like Does the
I've
Dog
heard of
die?
That website.
And you can actually look up,
yeah, and it'll tell you. Whoa. Like, I'm sure this would be on there.
Animal Die. Is it called that?
I think it's called it's Does the Dog
like
Die.
That. Does the Dog Die?
Yeah, let me check. Something. Yeah.
Oh, this is great.
Yeah.
Dog fighting, kids dying, incarceration, drownings, addiction, people getting hit by cars. We got the Umbrella Academy, Supernatural. This is...
Oh, here's a good one for you. Were animals harmed in the making of Suspiria? Maggots were crushed during the filming of the movie.
Yeah. That part kind of made me squirm a little bit, too. Just like the sound design there. Staying on the feet, just like it's very creepy.
I feel like I don't have that. Like my notes are not very long, like at all.
I have a question for you. I wrote this down for myself. Would I? And I wonder, do people prefer this is Italian horror, or is it Euro? Even just generally Euro horror, and would you prefer that to Kubrick? See, it has similar overlaps to me, but. I would think some people would like this rather than like this cold, calculating kind of horror, like The Shining.
I guess I could see that.
2 or 3 years.
I mean, The Shining is literally like maybe my favorite horror movie ever. So I prefer that. it's like one or two for me. Mm-hmm. It's and this is definitely not that. So I definitely prefer.
Yeah, it's a different stylization.
Yeah.
It has, to be aesthetically fascinating, but this one is just, here's the red and Satan red color. Here's the emerald green. There's a lot of emerald. Yeah.
I'll reference the remake where it's almost like if they tried to remake this as if Kubrick did it, because it's very, it has a very muted palette. It is very cold. And it's by an Italian. It's by another Italian, Luca Guadagnino. But it's almost like they tried to do like the opposite style of this. So yeah, there's your, you know, you could check that out and see that you have like a direct comparison there.
because with Kubrick, I think Kubrick is also a very like aesthetic director when he wants to be. Especially with like.
Sure.
The Shining, there's a, what's that called? Like the sort of like center, like everything is just like, there's like a thing in the center. You know what I'm talking about?
The horizon, the vanishing point?
maybe, or kind of like that, like Danny going through the hallways,
on the tricycle. Mm-hmm.
And like, I think people have overlaid, it's almost like these two angles coming into like a point in the center. And like, okay. They say that a lot of like the shots, the way that he shoots that movie, I guess what I'm trying to say is like, Kubrick is very aesthetic, but the aesthetic has a reason. There's like an underlying reason for him doing it that way, or he's like trying to express something. Like he's very meticulous on his sets and like all of the stuff that's going on, like in the background, the props, all that stuff is like, he's very meticulous in that way. And this, like you said, red bad, green good, where like I still enjoyed it. I thought it was visually interesting, but it's like, it's eating the frosting off of a cake and then throwing the cake away because the cake's not very good. Like there's not really a lot of substance. Like it, you know, it, the sugar of that frosting satisfies your sweet tooth, but then your stomach feels kind of bad later. And you're like, oh, I can't finish the rest of this because it's kind of gross now that it's like settling in my stomach.
That's a good, I like that analogy.
Yeah, yeah. I think that's pretty good. Yeah. It's the zap. Yeah. Yeah. I don't have anything else to add either. If we want to roll into scores, wrap ups.
Well, I also, my last note is I'm more freaked out by the polka dancers.
Yeah, it was very brief.
Yeah.
Very brief.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. But then 3 minutes later, it was the seeing eye dog, so.
Yeah.
That was like a weird, like, it looked like a church, but also a bar. Yeah. I couldn't tell where we were. Because it was like the polka dancers, and then it looked like people were sitting at the pews, and then like the blind guy was sitting at a bar with drinks. I was like, what kind of like multi-purpose establishment is this?
That's just Cold War Germany. Cold War Germany. Yeah, that's for you.
That's just Germans being Germans. Scores.
Okay. I'll start us off, I guess. The way that you were kind of how you were saying, like, how do you, there's like two ways to watch a movie. We've kind of talked that way when judging movies before on this, and how I kind of fall in the middle, and that's where I try to put my scores for the movies, is like both ends of the spectrum, kind of. I did enjoy the music. I enjoyed the visual style. I didn't enjoy the story. I felt like there was a lack of like purpose for some of this stuff. Ultimately, I settled on a 6. It really varied for me, but I think ultimately I was like, yeah, it was, you know, that was okay. I had a decent time. But it wasn't, you know, again, compared to like what I would hope for with a classic like this, it was a letdown. I wasn't angry at the end of it. I was kind of like, that ending was kind of rushed and dumb, and other things gave me pause. But I am a horror junkie, so you give me some good kills, and I do forgive a lot of other issues with the movie. And this had some good horror moments. So yeah, I got to give it points for that. So 6 for me.
Okay, I'll go next. I was thinking either a 5 or a 6, but my gut said 6. Yeah, I mean, I've seen, you know, like YouTube channels that are like best cinematography in movies, or, you know, color in movies, like those types of video essay style things. And I feel like the best parts of this movie can basically be almost like condensed into like a trailer of like, you know, the really cool stuff that it does.
The initial kill scene, like,
yeah,
is just, yeah.
Yeah, and this is the kind of movie that I feel like, you know, you could be at a Halloween party and it's on in the background, and like that's kind of the best way to like sort of passively view it. Because sure, if you sit down and try and like watch it analytically, you're like, I don't know, these characters don't really, there's nothing really going on.
Yeah.
But yeah, I do, yeah, maybe that's where I land on this movie, is that it has to be taken in as like an aesthetically visual feast, otherwise it doesn't necessarily work. And I think on that end, it for the most part worked for me, but like watching it for like characterization and story and like plot, it was pretty lacking. So yeah, and the overdub and like the like like there's like another scene where they're like sitting outside and her hair is blowing and it's like windy and it's like mostly silent, And then it's like when they're talking to each other, the microphone is just right there and like present in your face. And it's just like they didn't really do anything with like the space or like the sound design for like outdoor stuff when it's like, give me that wind blowing. I don't know. It shouldn't sound like a studio microphone.
That's something that's when she's talking to that like detective or doctor guy or whatever. I don't know if you guys know who this is, but that's Udo Kier. I thought I recognized his face and I looked him up and it was him. I know him more as an old man. Yeah, he's very like very striking eyes and certain other features, so I picked him out like right away. Yeah.
Six. There was some nice visuals, there was some like kinda cool stuff, but overall kinda left me a little underwhelmed for what I go for in like that 70s horror style.
Oh, that's Udo Kier. Oh wow. Yeah. Oh, okay. Yes, you're right. He is in this movie. I forgot about that. Yeah, yeah. Huh. This is out of 10, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's out of 6.
No. Yeah, so I would agree with you. The first 15 minutes of this movie, I thought it was pretty good. It hit hard. It was... I like the being picked up in an airport in a dark and stormy night by a strange guy in a taxi taking you to a weird place. I think that feels familiar to me. Going to a ballet school which is a witch's coven, and I think it's underdeveloped, frankly. It could have been, if there was a little bit more plot, I would have liked it a lot better, I think. So that's the way I saw it, and I'd probably give it a 4, which is sad because I think there's a lot to inspire an artist here, which if you're going to make a movie and think about how to make any shot look red, you know, or shot look green, try this out and take it as inspiration. So apparently it's inspired a lot of people, and I hate to give it a low rating because it has done that. Also, by the way, it's riffing on, obviously, and I thought I was being original, then I looked it up, obviously, on Wizard of Oz, a great horror movie in itself, and I like that it was trying that. It just, if it would have had a little bit more something else, meeting other weird characters, I don't know what, so I guess I just would have done it differently, but you have convinced me to try the remake, which,
yeah,
really, I mean, actually, you just said Tom York, I'm like, oh, okay. Yes, I will do this. But, yeah, I appreciate you bringing that up in this.
Yeah,
Radiohead brings everything together.
Yeah, yeah, he's got that. That was the one thing from my initial watch when I didn't like it as much was the soundtrack, and I put the theme song Suspirium. That's been like on my Spotify like ever since. It's great. Yeah, let me know what you think about that one.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
It feels good to like check this off my bucket list, I guess.
Yeah. it is nice. I was thinking the other day too that like it's cool, like, you know, obviously I'd like to watch movies anyways, but like I like doing it for the show because then it's like it feels like I'm like being productive while I'm just like indulging in my hobby. And it also helps when I'm like checking off like these kind of, you know, classic or iconic movies off the list. It's yeah.
We've turned it into math.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
I started doing this thing where like if I ever have a day off work, I watch a horribly depressing documentary on either like HBO or whatever, you know, whatever streaming
which
service.
Is what you should do on a day off of work. Depress yourself.
I got the house to myself. I'm gonna make myself a nice breakfast, pour a glass of coffee. Let's see what's on HBO to make me depressed. A couple weeks ago, I watched like the Jared Fogle documentary, or we watched that telemarketers one like last week, which wasn't as depressing. It was kind of funny, but still like didn't feel good about our institutions.
Sure.
But I watched one that I think falls into that category of a doc that I think could have been like a 30-minute episode of a TV show. But it was from 2011. It's called There's Something Wrong with Aunt Diane. Have either of you heard of this?
No.
So
let me I feel like this is one that Kalia has watched and I've kind of like half watched. So she watches, she also likes to watch a lot of depressing documentaries.
So this one, so this was what I thought was interesting about it was that it was pre like 4 or 5 part mini series where they do that thing with like a true story and they just drag it on for like 5 hour-long episodes. And it's like, we really, this is from like 2011. So it's like basically a tight 90. But I watched it and it's like this story about, so this guy and his wife, they go camping. It's like in New Jersey. He's a very like New Jersey guy when you hear him talk. But him and his wife and like their 3 kids and a couple of their nephews go camping. And then they're like, okay, we're packing up. Like, I'll meet you at the house. The husband and the dog leave. And then she takes the kids and they leave separately. And then 4 hours later, they find out that she, with the kids in the car, went the wrong way on a freeway.
Yep. Okay, yes, I do know this one.
And crashed into another car like 85 miles an hour and killed 8 people, herself included. And the doc is basically like this husband and like her sister, the mother's sister, like, because initially they found out, and it's like, it kind of buries the lead, like within the first 15 minutes, they're like, yeah, she had like a point, like a 0.19 blood alcohol level, and she had high amounts of THC in her system. So it's like she was extremely drunk and very high. And like, that's the whole movie is like them trying to get like another autopsy, another toxicology report. Cause this guy is just like, my wife isn't like this. He kind of talked like Matt Damon in The Departed, which I guess is more of a Boston thing, but he's like, my wife doesn't do this. I know my wife. She doesn't do this. And like, they're trying to get another toxicology. They're trying to get like, basically he's like, my wife's name got besmirched. Like they think that they were killed by a drunk driver. And then basically at the end of it, they do another toxicology thing and it comes back the same, that like, that's what it was. Oh, okay. But if you watch it through the lens of like examining someone in denial, it becomes a much more interesting documentary because there's little things that happen in it where like his sister-in-law, she's like smoking a cigarette during a thing. And she looks at the camera crew and is like, oh my God, no one in my family knows that I smoke. So when this comes out, they're going to have some questions for me. And it's like, oh, you have a secret and you don't, and no one in your family knows about it. Could it possibly be that your sister like is struggling with like a very secret like alcoholism? Okay. And they kind of have this like theory that she had like this tooth that was bugging her. And like, she was trying to like dose it by like alleviate the pain by like drinking. Mm. But and then there's like another scene where the same woman like is talking about the husband, and it's like, it felt very damning, where she was like, yeah, he didn't even want kids. And when like the one son who survived the car accident is like sad, he's like, yep, that's what happened. We just got to move on though. And it's
God.
You almost wonder, it's like, yeah, no wonder this lady was like secretly drinking and smoking pot. She was doing everything. And you were just like, yeah, okay, honey, I'm going to bed. But I think I just thought it was interesting that it was a documentary that, because I feel like you don't really see that with like these miniseries docs now. Like, I feel like they really lean into the like who could have done this? Is there a conspiracy that happened? Was she drinking or wasn't she drinking? Like, they would have leaned more into that and like squeezed at least 2 episodes about that. But they did it in like 1 hour and 40. And it's like, yeah, it could have been shorter because they kind of tell you exactly what happened like 20 minutes in. But I thought it was an interesting story and an interesting examination, more so of that dude and like his sort of denial about what happened with like his family versus like, you know, the actual like sad tragedy of it all. But yeah, I don't know, if you have 1 hour and 40 to kill and you have a day off and you just want your mood ruined, go watch There's Something Wrong with Aunt Diane. This is like one of those like true crime TikToks that got me too. I've seen it on there before too. People love doing that and I hate like I get sucked into it.
Yeah,
but 9 times out of 10, as soon as I learn the name of the person, I just Google it and read an article instead of like watching their 5 TikTok series about like, just like, because you're just reading the Wikipedia article. I might as well just go do it myself and save myself some time and not have to listen to you. But yeah, that's what I did with my day off.
Nice.
Really brought the mood down.
My lights are wigging out right now.
Spooky. Yeah.
It's spooky. Okay, all right. So that's another one down. So for I don't know what I'm doing. So for next week, it's Nick's pick. So I guess since we're doing picks, I'll let you do the announcement or whatever for it.
So for next week, I kind of went along with that theme of classic horror movies that I've never seen. I think there are like a few tent poles. There's Halloween, there's like Nightmare on Elm Street, there's like Friday the 13th. All of these have spawned these multi, like, decades of, like, you know, spin-offs and sequels. And this one falls into that same category as well. I brought in the Texas Chainsaw Massacre from 1974?
Yep.
Yeah, directed by Tobe Hooper. A guy, what else? Have we seen anything that he's done? His name sounds really familiar.
For the show, his other big one is Poltergeist.
That might be, okay.
But I don't think we've done any of his movies. No, he did Invaders from Mars.
That's right. Yeah. For our dud. That was,
Oh, you guys covered that one?
Yeah, we did. Oh. Yeah. I totally forgot that was him. The same year he did the Texas Chainsaw Massacre 2.
I've heard the second one is good, but I've also heard the first one is good. And, well, you'll find out next week.
Apparently, it's really silly. Like, the poster for the second one is a spoof of The Breakfast Club with, like, Leatherface as a Judd Nelson's character or whatever.
There it is. I haven't seen that. It is totally a spoof. Yeah.
So I think it's way, way sillier. And, like, I know Dennis Hopper is in it, and he puts in a very Dennis Hopper-y character performance. So I'm definitely gonna check that one out. Just to see what it's like, you know?
I might watch the second one in the meantime as well.
Yeah.
But that's my spooky pick this year.
Cool. Sweet. Where is that one?
It's on
everywhere.
If you have Prime, it's on like Freevee.
Oh, yeah,
so you'll have ads, but it's on Amazon Prime.
It is like everywhere. Yeah.
Pluto,
Tubi, Peacock. Yeah. It is like tons of places. Cool. All right. So watch that there at one of those if you don't want to be spoiled for the Texas Chainsaw Massacre before next week's episode. These episodes come out every week, every Wednesday at 7 p.m. EST on Twitch and YouTube in video form, as well as Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and more in audio form. We also have social pages on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and TikTok. And also, I'm gonna throw in a little personal plug on my YouTube channel that I only use for these. For my movie list videos, it's another day or two out for me, but by the time this episode posts, my best movies of 2020 video will be out.
Oh,
which I've been working on for a while. I spend way too much time working on those videos, so I wanted to shout it out. I'm trying to catch up after my I did my best movies of the 2010s. And that set me back a few years because that took me a very long time.
I would think so.
So that one's coming out. And then, I don't know, I'm hoping to get caught up with best of 2021, 22, preferably before the end of this year. But I feel like that's probably not going to happen. Maybe next year I'll be all caught up and up to date. So that's in my Ganon Guy 64 YouTube channel. It's literally... like the only stuff I post on that channel are these videos whenever I end up doing them.
Oh, and then Josh, if you want to plug anything before we go.
Oh yeah, right. Yeah.
We always put your stuff in the description, but you know.
Yeah.
Anything, Letterboxd, YouTube. I do have a video coming out on Tobe Hooper's The Funhouse.
Which is
a movie he made about 3 years. Well, what 1980. I actually really like that movie.
Okay. I never heard that one before.
Cheesy, but fascinating to me. So, yeah, The Funhouse. And I'm going through, I just started this, so it'll be happening the next several months to years, going through the Oscars and revising them. Starting in 1980.
Oh, really? Yeah. That's what you're doing with it. Okay.
1981 Oscars, trying to figure out what I would, where they went wrong and where, and I'm just doing Best Picture, but.
Okay.
It's a very interesting exercise.
Are you just taking the ones that were nominated, or are you taking anything from the year and say something random that wasn't nominated that?
So I'm looking at the eligible.
Okay. Or, eligible.
Yes, and there is actually a website, probably many websites that where you can get that list. It's fascinating. To look
that
at
sounds cool.
What they screwed up royally. Or didn't get it right. In retrospect.
Okay.
But it's also an exercise in helping me watch things I hadn't seen before.
Yeah.
Some certain years. It's kind of fun to do, I think. So I'm going to start doing that as well.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. Yeah, even though I find that the Oscars are wrong more often than not, I do like using them as kind of a base or like a litmus for, you know, just movie history.
Yes.
Over the decades, kind of cool.
Yeah, let us know when you get to 2007.
Oh, yeah.
Why? What's special about that?
It's There Will Be Blood versus No Country for Old Men.
Yeah.
Oh.
And I'm a big There Will Be Blood proponent.
I'm like, on a given day, it can depend, but I lean There Will Be Blood, but I also adore No Country for Old Men, so.
Anyway,
Your lights are freaking out right now.
I know. With all that said, I am your church occupying lederhosen dancing TJ. and with me as always.
As always, I'm your nonverbal lurch bringing you a nice tray of sleep medication induced wine. That she keeps drinking for some reason.
Wow. Okay, whoa. I'm staying away from Germany is what I'm doing.
Okay, yeah, that's right.
How about that? Just not getting on the plane.
Perfect.
I'll be a worse ballet dancer for it. I know
you
that.
Hear that music, turn around, get on a flight back.
All right.
All right.
Bye. Bye-bye. Boo.